It's time for Money for Lunch, where we feed your brain and your business with supersized portions of business and financial news. Now your host, Bert Martinez.
Welcome to Money for Lunch. All right, so starting a new thing here at Money for Lunch, I am going to start every show with either an inspirational quote or clip just to set the mood. And so today's quote, if you will, comes from my buddy, Mark Cuban, who I've never met, but we do correspond via email occasionally. Mark Cuban says, "Work like there is someone working 24 hours a day to take it all away from you. Work like there is someone working 24 hours a day to take it all away from you." Hoo-ah! Keep that in memory there. Put that in your memory. A nice little quote from Mr. Mark Cuban. And you know what? It's so true. We have this ever-changing landscape. And you're not really sure who your competitors are or whatever. I've said this many times. I don't understand why we continue to do as much business with China as we do. I mean, you know, and again, not to get into political stuff here, but we just saw the administration make all these changes on steel tariffs, and we've heard President Trump say some unflattering things about the Chinese, but yet I think that they are one of the biggest problems in trade in the world. And the reason I say that is because since they have no, what's the word I'm looking for, no checks and balances, or maybe they're just given carte blanche, it just seems like we get tainted lumber, flooring from China. We get tainted toothpaste. We get tainted toys. We get, you name it. If you hear something bad about, you know, tainted something, it's coming from China. And today's guest, by the way, can probably attest to some of this. I don't know if it's affecting him, but I recently saw a documentary type show on Netflix, and they were talking, interestingly enough, about how China is infiltrating the honey bee industry or the honey industry. And today's guest is an American farmer. He's also the CEO of Walker Honey Farms. And I was talking to him before the show started. He happens to be going through a transition there. And he's coming to us live from his office, which is inside his studio. I mean, inside his warehouse. So we may hear some background noises, which is okay. But today on the show, we have Clint Walker III. He is a third-generation beekeeper in Central Texas, my home state. He has served the beekeeping industry as president of the American Beekeeping Federation and the National Honey Board as vice chairman. Clint and his wife Janice own and operate Walker Honey Farm and Dancing Bee Winery, engaging in honey production, honey bottling, specializing in a variety of honeys. They also operate Walker Honey Farm Store, a direct-to-consumer on-the-farm sales outlet for both honey and mead, with monthly farm tours and twice-annual farmers market festivals. Mr. Clint Walker, welcome to Money for Lunch.
Thank you, Bert. Thanks for having me.
You bet, man. I'm always excited to have somebody from Texas on the show. I love Texas. I grew up in Houston, so it's always good to have a fellow Texan on the show. And you know what? I'm excited to talk to you about this because, you know, you constantly hear in the media that honeybees are being threatened. I talked about this this thing about China, and so I'm excited to have you on the show and kind of give us your input. What is happening in, you know, the honeybee industry? Are we going to lose the honeybee? Give us your thoughts here.
Well, you started with really an on-point, an apropos quote from another fellow Texan of ours, Mark Cuban. I don't know if Mark is native-born Texan, but he's glad to be from here now.
Yeah.
But that quote worked like there's someone working 24 hours to take it away from you. Escaping your segue then into the China piece, it's all part of, as you intimate to your listeners already, our story in the honey industry. Someone is trying to take it away from us, and specifically the Chinese are trying to take away not just our honey sales and our sales to consumers here in the U.S., but the integrity of our market. Honey has the highest favorable value. If you stand in front of your local grocery store, Bert, and the next 100 people that come out the door, five to seven of them will have honey in their cart, and you stop and ask the entire 100, do you like honey, love honey? 97% of them will tell you they love honey. It's the highest rating of any product that they have in their grocery cart. And yet when people can't trust that Walker Honey Farm honey on the grocery store shelf or Sioux Bee honey or any of the good regional brands that are out there that you have in Arizona and California and around the country, if they can't trust that anymore, if they worry that there's tainted Chinese honey in there, then I don't just lose the sale of a jar of honey. I lose my profession. I lose my business because people can't trust the product anymore.
Yeah, and it's
by the
crazy.
Way, Mark.
Go ahead.
By the way, Mark Cuban eats Walker honey.
Oh, I love that. I love that. I'm gonna send him a message. I'm gonna let him know. Hey, we're talking about you here on the show.
That's right.
And
but
you know
it is
what?
Crazy. You're right.
Yeah, and I don't understand. And maybe I'm just too. I guess you know what? I'm sorry. I do understand. It's all about money. Somebody is making money, and that's why, and when I say somebody in our government is making money, is profiting by allowing China to do what they do on such a regular basis. Because, you know, Clint, if I came to your store and, you know, let's just say I did something terrible to your store, you might forgive me and allow me back a second time. But if I did something terrible to your, you know, a second time, chances are you're going to probably say, Bert, I'm sorry, we can't let you back in the store anymore. We don't trust you. And,
exactly.
Man, I just don't understand why our government allows China constantly. And of course, by the way, in all fairness, in this documentary, apparently they stopped allowing China to bring or import their honey because it is so contaminated. They put all sorts of crap in there. But of course, China being the, you know, the I don't know, the ruthless players that they are, they ship it to other countries and put a different label on it and then bring it into the United States. Thank you.
Well,
transship
exactly.
it.
Transship
and so these,
right.
You know, these guys play dirty. And again, our government, especially current, you know, with our current administration, who is supposed to be taking such a hard stance against China and imports and stuff like that, you know, he should really come down. The government needs to come down on these guys and say, hey, you know, screw it. So let me ask you this, Clint. If we, meaning we as America, if we did not accept any more outside honey from the good people as well as the bad, we just say, hey, no more honey imports until we can figure it out, would that hurt us in any way? I mean, it seems like, and you correct me if I'm wrong, don't we create enough honey here in America to sustain our consumers or no?
There was a time when we did. 25 years ago when my wife and I, when Janice and I bought the family business from my folks and took over the, as you say, the third generation, we were producing a little over 2/3 of the honey that we were eating as Americans. So we were doing a pretty good job of satisfying the demand. Now that number is 2/3 imports and 1/3 production. So we certainly are having issues here in the U.S. for several reasons that we could discuss if you want to. But there's plenty of good honey. Our good friends just on our northern border, the Canadians, make some wonderful honey out there on the plains of the Intermountain West, just like we have here in the U.S. in Alberta, Manitoba, Saskatchewan. They make some great, nice honey. They have great high standards in Canada. There's some great honey to the south of us here in Mexico. The Europeans started tapping the Mexican market 30, 40 years ago, and the Mexicans brought their standards up to a higher level than U.S. standards. And so there's some really good stuff there. Argentina ships a lot of great honey into the U.S. that's trustworthy. You can test it. It's just as clean and honest and straightforward as domestic honey. The real bad player is China. And so I would advocate, and I think the beekeeping industry would certainly advocate, whether you talk to one of the two national organizations, beekeeper organizations, or the National Honey Board, which can't take a political stance, but we would all argue that China is the real drag on the confidence in the honey market. Transshipment issue, as you point out, and as they mentioned in the documentary there, the honey episode in Rot on Netflix, that is the real issue. Give you an example of that. We can import, I have in my inbox, in my email right now, offers from Southeast Asian countries to ship honey in here at below half of today's domestic market price. So the domestic market is $2.50 a pound, depending on the variety, as high as $3 a pound for some special varieties here in the U.S. And we can buy Southeast Asian honey for under a dollar, and here's the kicker, from countries that don't have enough beehives to produce the millions of pounds they're shipping. So it's obvious there's a pipeline from China, and just as you said to your listeners, it's being repackaged in new drums and relabeled as Vietnamese honey or Taiwanese honey and shipped to the U.S. as if that country produced it.
Yeah, and you know, again, this is something that hopefully, the government will take a stand on or against. And you know what, our government, like all governments, there's just so many moving parts, and they're trying to put out so many fires. It's just one more on a list of things to do. But hopefully they'll look at this, because here's my other question. So besides, China, you already mentioned, hey, you took over the farm, 25 years ago. What else is threatening our American honey producers? I mean, is it environmental, or, talk about this a little bit.
Right. Well, the honey industry now, or the beekeeping industry, is really pollination-centric. The financial drivers in our industry right now are really pollination income from beekeepers, and that's a little counterintuitive to what your listener out there would imagine. You'd say, well, you've got a beehive, and what are your products? Well, your main product is honey. You might have some beeswax. You might have some bee pollen for nutrients, supplement industry, that kind of thing. But honey would be your main product. No longer do beekeepers make most of their money from honey. We now make most of our money from pollination contracts, where we're paid to bring our bees in during a bloom for almonds is the big one in Southern California. It's going on right now. It's a February-March event. Bees will be released from the almond pollination here in the next few weeks and get shipped back across the country. To give you an idea of the scale of that, there's 1.2 million beehives in Southern California right now as we speak, in the Central Valley of California, not Southern California, from Bakersfield north through Sacramento and even on up the valley. And there are only about 1.5 million managed colonies of honeybees in the United States. So you're talking about a large percentage, 80%, maybe 90% of the bees in the country that are commercially managed by guys like me that are making their living out of beekeeping are shipped from Florida and Pennsylvania and New York and Texas and all across the southern states into California for 2 months to pollinate the almond crop. So the beekeeping industry is forced to put their bees into precarious situations, freight them, that creates stress on the bees. That's one of the big things that is threatening honeybees is we're forced economically to ship our bees great distances. Bigger threat is when you move your beehives into monocultures, big, large ag operations where as far as the eye can see, everything is row cropped or orchard. And those environments require large amounts of synthetic chemistry inputs or chemicals, pesticides, right, fungicides, things like that. And those are tough on any animal. Those are tough on big animals like you and me.
Yeah.
Certainly tough on small animals like honeybees. And so that's one of the big things that that beekeepers are faced with is detoxifying their hives. And that's creating the large loss numbers. I'm sure you know the numbers, Bert. I know a lot of your listeners do because they see it in the press every year. The annual loss rate among beekeepers is 50% of their honeybee colonies. 50% of our hives die every year. Now, imagine if that were going on in another livestock, in cattle, in chickens, in hogs. If the report came out that half the hogs in Iowa died, you know, over the winter, over the course of a year. It would be devastating, and yet beekeepers still manage to come back from that. But the cost, the toll on the bottom line in beekeeping is tremendous for those kind of losses, that kind of attrition on an annual basis.
So do you have a way of stopping that? Because that's massive. I mean, that is like almost, you know, I mean, when you think about that, you go to somebody and say, hey, half of your business is going to be gone tomorrow or half of your inventory is going to be gone tomorrow. Yeah, that's alarming. So is there any way to correct that?
There is, Bert, but you just outlined the problem a few moments ago when you said we just need some common sense in our government. I'll refer back to the context in which you brought that up, and that is this: our trade business. We worked for 25 years, way back to the Clinton administration. Every administration since the Clinton administration has had an opportunity presented to them by beekeepers with evidence, with the stroke of a presidential pen, to have solved the China honey problem, and yet we just got it done here a few years ago. We had to go through some commerce laws that we didn't approach it with back in the 90s. But I was there as president of one of the two National Beekeepers Association. Our associations worked together in Washington to do this. We're unified on this subject, and yet we couldn't find common sense partners inside the political and bureaucratic structure in Washington until just recently on this issue. And that's the same issue on pesticides. We've been at EPA at the table for 15, 20 years now. We've met with all the major manufacturers of the big ag drugs, and we've said, you know, you can do this more responsibly. We've not asked them to throw away their toolbox, as they call it, their tools that they use to manage and grow crops. We understand the need for that. We've got a toolbox, too. We fight a parasitic mite inside the beehive, and we try to do it with friendly methods like organic acids and essential oils. But sometimes we need a piece of bench chemistry to help us with that. We understand that, but EPA doesn't require big ag, the Archer Daniels Midlands, the ConAgras, the Bayer Chemicals, the CropLife, which is the organization, that trade group that represents all the big chemical companies. They don't require of them that they play on the same playing field that the beekeeper or the smallholder farmer out here has to play on. We go up there without money. We pay to fly ourselves to Washington, D.C., and we pay for our hotel room, and we get there, and we're in their K Street, you know, mansions, you know, eating, drinking their espresso as we meet and try to negotiate common sense solutions with them.
Man, that is just
And
wild.
we don't find willing partners. I'll share with you one vignette. I'll let you look over our shoulder. We're sitting in a meeting with EPA about 20 years ago, and we lay this out and we say, this makes so much sense, doesn't it? We're sitting in a room with 20 regulators, people who set policy at EPA, bureaucrat level, you know, below the political appointee level. And the first question they asked us was not, well, does this really make sense? Because they agreed with our position. They didn't ask us, had we really thought this through, because they knew we had, because we'd been discussing it with them for 5 or 10 years. The first question they asked us when we finished our presentation and asked them for some changes in the regulations was, who from Capitol Hill is going to call us? Which senator is going to call us if we do this?
Mm.
So that's where the common sense goes out the window, is because they are answering to politics, as you said, as you rightly said earlier.
Yeah, and you know, what's amazing to me, that it's just gotten to that point. And I say this all the time, when you see these politicians make these crazy, crazy decisions, how can another human being in good conscience look at the facts and say, nah, we're just going to deny the facts and do something completely different? I mean, it just boggles the mind. It's just unbelievable. Let me ask you this. All right, so we've talked about some of the things that are going on. Do you have any areas that, in your opinion, look positive for the U.S. Beekeeper?
Well, I really do, and it's interesting that it really comes from the dark cloud. You know, we've talked about the cloud, and certainly beekeepers, as we've said, are at a difficult time, and we're having a difficult time with cheap and tainted import honey, primarily from China. But that cloud has created for the beekeeping industry a moment here that we are really just beginning to appreciate and be able to take advantage of. And that is that anytime you introduce some risk into the marketplace, so the consumer out there is saying, well, can I trust my honey? Then the consumer has to go and feels obligated to go educate themselves. And when they do, they find out that they have plenty of good options to buy good honey, great honey, right here at home, close to home. And they start asking questions about, well, let's see, that even makes more sense. It's going to lower that carbon input. So if I care about the environment, why would I want to put honey on a boat from China or Southeast Asia when I can buy it from the beekeeper down the road that just hauled in a load on his one-ton truck and extracted it and put it in a jar for me? They start caring
right.
more about sustainability. They're certainly caring about the quality of their food. And then the natural result of that, Bert, is they're willing to pay a little bit of a price point for that. They're willing to say, hey, I'm glad that job is down the road. In fact, my cousin Bob works down there at that bee farm. And so I know he's getting a salary, and he's spending it at the local, you know, grocery store and the local hardware store and paying taxes here in the United States and paying taxes in our county and our city. So people are willing to pay, and not just people with, you know, we consider those who have discretionary income, but people that are living on tighter incomes are making better food choices. They're buying eggs at the back door of someone's house, or buying that, you know, that egg that they know that they can trust, or some grass-fed beef that was grown locally, or shopping vegetables at the farmer's market. So I think we've got that moment as beekeepers. We recognize that. And one of the fastest growing segments of our industry is honey being sold, what we call farm gate sales or farmer's market sales, people buying direct from the producer.
Yeah. You know, and it is true, though. I'm so glad you brought that up. It is true. There is a certain amount of pride. We care more when we know that, hey, this is, you know, honey from our local area. We go to a farmer's market, and one of the things I learned, interestingly enough, by going to a beekeeper by buying my honey direct from a beekeeper at a farmer's market, and I didn't know this. And so I'm going to for the listeners who may not know this, if you're suffering from allergies, especially if you're moving from one part of the country to another part, and all of a sudden you're being hit by maybe allergies or whatever, get the local honey because it's pollinated with all the local flowers and stuff, and it'll help ease your allergies. It will help get your body or your immune system to the new environment much, much quicker. And that is something that I never knew. And it just gives you another, another reason to love honey.
That's right. And if you buy the big national chain honeys, you're missing those pollen grains that have been filtered out of the honey. But when you stand in front of that beekeeper, as you just said, you do, Bert, at your local farmer's market, when you stand in front of that beekeeper, they're passing it through a 50 micron strainer, about like a cheesecloth that grandma and grandpa or Uncle Joe used to do in the kitchen, you know, squeezing honey through a strainer just to strain out the beeswax parts. And that's going to have all of your natural pollens in it. It's what we call all of the honey. You know, I'm an old man, Bert. I drink fat-free milk when I drink milk at all. And when I was a kid, I grew up milking a dairy cow, and I drank it with, you know, I don't know what it had in it, 8% cream, 8% milk fat, something like that.
Right.
And now I choose the fat-free milk because I don't want the fat. No one chooses the processed honey because they don't want all the good stuff that the bees put in the honey. So I think we make the opposite choice with honey. We want all the honey the bees, everything the bees put in that honey, and nothing extracted and taken away as Clint does with his fat-free milk.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, well, listen, we're almost out of time, and I wanted to dive into this because we definitely like to help our listeners with their business and their entrepreneurial journey. So one of the things I wanted to kind of ask you real quick is, do you remember the moment you knew that the traditional path wasn't for you? Because my producer told me that, you very early in your educational career, you decided to go a different way. You were offered different things. Talk about this a little bit.
Well, we did. I, like a lot of farm kids, I shook the dust off my feet and headed out of town, never to return, and woke up on the West Coast in Los Angeles. Love L.A. Lived there for 4 years in the late 80s and early 90s. And at some point, my wife and I said, you know, we can take our two young boys and we can go back to the farm and we can change our lifestyle. And so we made a quality of life decision. So we came home, worked for about a year, looked the business over, decided that we thought there was some it was a good solid business, been around since 1930. My grandfather started it here locally, and so we thought this could be fun and exciting. We were a couple of years in, and we saw some things coming down the pike, and I have to say it was Janice that I can remember one morning over coffee said, is beekeeping only, and by beekeeping only, we mean pollination, producing honey. We were selling packaged bees and queens. I won't get too esoteric here with you, but it was a hive-centered or a bee-centric business model. She said, is that going to sustain us in the future? And so we looked at opportunities, and shortly after that, we began to bottle more honey, and then we developed honey products, and then we started retail farm-to-use sales and started going to grocery stores and doing things like peanut butter and honey and then beeswax candles and on and on and on. So
that's
kind of our journey from a production model to a vertically integrated, diversified model. And you know, I see that all across agriculture. Actually, the cotton sheets that are on my bed that I slept on last night was grown in Alabama. They sent it out to be ginned. They retained ownership of it. Then they sent it out to a weaver, and then cloth was made out of it. And then they sent it out to a sewer, manufactured sheets and other articles, and then they still owned it. The people that produced that cotton, that put that seed in the ground, still own that final product and sold it to me online, great cotton sheets. And so that kind of model is being repeated throughout agriculture right now, and people are willing to, say, hey, I want to re-envision how I do farm life, how I do agriculture. I love the farm, want to be there, but I don't want to surrender my product on the world market, and then I suffer at the vicissitudes of fluctuating markets and fluctuating crops. So I don't know if I'm going to have a bumper crop this year like I did 3 years ago, or a short crop like I had last year. I hope 2018 is a great year. But if it's a great year and then the market slides, how much gain did I make? But when I retain my honey and I do value add it, and I'm looking for the next product to develop here with our R&D and looking for different markets to put it in, then I level out my cash flow, not just year to year, but throughout the year. So entrepreneurially speaking, I would say that we just have a very common sense approach in-house. One of our we're very fortunate to have a lot of 30-somethings working in our company, and they're young and they're smart and they're half my age and twice my energy. And they'll come to us with an idea, and we just say, well, show us the – they already know the drill now. It's show us the revenue stream. Show us the upside to this thing. What's the growth potential in the marketplace, maybe some demographics. But then what are the risks? And so we're just looking for things that have an upside on the revenue stream and a relatively low risk side. And then if it works, you go for it.
Right, right. I love that.
It's not any different, though, than your Mark Cuban quote that you opened with. You go to bed at night and you have an idea of what you're going to do tomorrow morning. You get a good night's sleep and you get up early and you hit a good lick. And it's just hard work is really what it is.
Absolutely. And one of the takeaways for everybody listening is sometimes we get so stuck on the core business, you know, and luckily, you know, Janice had that great question, and luckily you were, you know, call it humble enough or open to the fact that, you know, maybe Janice is onto something. And this, by the way, is not necessarily an easy thing for a lot of companies to do, is to open up and look at other ways to make revenue. And I always look at people like Blockbuster, who at one point dominated their industry, and they're gone because they were unwilling to look at what could be. And they had a chance. They had, I believe, two different chances to buy or do business with Netflix, and they chose not to. And Kodak. Here's Kodak, who owned all of the digital patents in the world. They owned them all, but yet it wasn't their core business. They didn't want to get away from, you know, quote, the film business or whatever. And you know, they have just about gone out of business. All right, let me ask you this. How do you deal with fear or rejection or whatever you want to call it? You know, I mean, you obviously have had to deal with that as an entrepreneur, but also dealing there with Washington, D.C. So when things don't go your way, how do you deal with that?
Yeah, I think that you're right. That is something that if you're going to take any risks, and your listenership is the entrepreneurial type, you're already speaking to the risk takers of the world. If you can't stand the heat, I think you know how to finish that. Get out of your kitchen. You're going to take, you know, anytime you take a risk, anytime you put yourself out there, goodness, it's just a relationship. You got married, Bert, and when you got married, you said, man, this is a big risk. What if things don't go well? So you said, you know what, regardless of the risk, I'm going to commit. And I think when you commit and you have your values and you have your ethics intact, and you know you can sleep with yourself at night because your business practices are such that you are proud to tell people what you do and why you do it. This is our rationale. Here on the farm, we tell everybody that walks in the door how we handle our beehive. We answer every question straightforward and honestly. So I can sleep at night And once I do that, then I commit. And that's, again, I want to go back to that. That's a big thing. Then when someone says, is a naysayer to what you're doing, or takes a pot shot at you, or doesn't expect you to compete on an unlevel playing field, you say, that's okay. I may win this one, or I may lose this one. I may win or lose this battle, but I'm in it for the long game. And in the long game, we all win when we take a calculated risk, make a commitment, and then work hard.
I like that. Yeah. You know, it's funny you should say that, because really, at the end of the day, ladies and gentlemen, it is about sleeping well at night and being able to look at yourself in the mirror. We see it all
Absolutely.
The time. Who's this gentleman who just got sentenced to 7 years in prison for, you know, supposedly he was a really, you know, he was a very wealthy individual, and he had bought out that pharmaceutical company, took that AIDS medicine from $1 a tablet to like $300 a tablet or something ridiculous like that. And, of course, he didn't go to jail for that, because that is his right as a capitalist, as an entrepreneur, to do that. Of course, he got a lot of negative flack about it. But what he ended up going to prison for is insider trading, of all things.
Yes.
It's like, dude, you know, so at the end of the day, it is about that integrity. It is about being able to sleep well at night and knowing that you're doing good by, you know, by ethical standards, right? All right, final question. Clint, any parting words of advice to entrepreneurs, to business folks? Go.
Yeah, don't become too emotionally attached to your business model. A plan, 5-year plan, a 3-year plan, a monthly budget is a guide. And if you marry yourself to that, if you marry yourself even to your methods or your policies, you become emotionally attached to them. And so I think we need a little bit of clinical distance from the way we function in our business, know why we do what we do, and the corollary is, but be ready to change it on a moment's notice, or even like we did 20 years ago, listen to that inner blink, that inner intuition of your wife, your friend, your employees when they say, I don't know if I'm comfortable here. I don't know if maybe there's something else we see. When you hear that, when you hear someone's radar go off and say, I might think I see something, or I wonder if, listen to that, be willing to flex and bend and change, and then you grow.
I love it. I love it. All right. So if somebody wants to find out more about Clint and Walker Honey Farms, how did they get a hold of you?
WalkerHoneyFarm.com. My email is just Clint@WalkerHoneyFarm.com. DancingBeeWinery.com. I do want to say a couple of things. If you're out there asking what can I do to help honeybees, go to BeeAndButterflyFund.org. I'll send these links to your producer, Bert. You can put them up on your page.
Perfect.
And they've got a chance for you to get a grant for seeds, for planting seeds in large plots. Corporations out there may want to take advantage of this. Bee Friendly is sexy right now. Let me just say that to corporations. So BeeAndButterflyFund.org. Or if you want to find local honey, besides doing what Bert and I do and go to your local farmer's market and find your local beekeeper, go to Honey Locator. It is on the National Honey Board, NHB.org, NHB for National Honey Board.org, and go to Honey Locator there. They've got a beautiful interactive map of the United States. You can zoom right into your local area and find local beekeepers and even what they offer. Do they have comb honey? What types of honey do they have? And source your honey locally.
I love it. I love it. And by the way, just to remind everybody that one of the businesses that got a fairly good investment was a beekeeping business there on Shark Tank, and you can look for it online. Clint, I want to say thank you so much for stopping by. If you want to help out Clint and the other beekeepers, again, there is the Butterfly Fund, thebutterflyfund.org. And if you want to reach out to Clint and his family or his farm, you can go to walkerhoneyfarm.com. Clint Walker, thank you so much for stopping by.
Bert, it's been a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Good stuff there from our central Texan Clint Walker and doing his business, right? Taking care of what do you call it? What is it? Mining his beeswax, something like that. Anyway, so I just am excited to have people like Clint Walker out there doing what they do, right? And it's just amazing to me that there's not more help for our beekeepers, because one of the things that we didn't have a chance to get into is really how vitally important bees are to our environment. Look it up. If bees die, literally, we could all die. As always, my friends, thank you so much for stopping by. Please share this show with everybody you know. Let's get the word out there. Let's help out our local beekeepers as much as possible. Remember, you were created to succeed.
Tune in Monday through Friday here on Money for Lunch. And check out our website at moneyforlunch.com.